Where does Florida State fit in the ACC picture in 2026? What does a good season even look like for Florida State? And what about that massive Labor Day matchup against SMU? That's what we're talking about today. So what's up, No Nation? I'm Jesse from Plant the Spear, and I am joined by a very special guest today, probably somebody who needs no introduction, ACC Network host, Florida State grad, and the queen of the ACC, Taylor Tannenbaum. Taylor, I really am grateful for your time of joining us on the show this morning. We set this up at ACC Football Kickoff. I've been teasing it for a while. I'm excited for this one. I mean, we're what, just a couple of days from kickoff. And so the season is really ramping up. So I just can't thank you enough for being on the show.
Well, I'm happy to be with you. It was great to like officially get to see each other at kickoff, and love the work that you guys do. We read it a lot here at ACC Network, and you know, we listen a lot just to make sure we're up to speed on everything seminal. So it's great to be with you, and I'm so excited. It's at the time we're taping this, it's Wednesday, August 26th. Like, we're kicking off Saturday. It's pretty crazy, but it's about time. It feels like it's been a long time coming at this point.
Oh, for sure. And I really appreciate that. And I mean, obviously you guys do great work over there covering the league and all the teams. And you know, the thing is, you're right. I mean, we're a couple days away, and I know that this opener doesn't really have the cachet that it has the last couple of years with the LSU series and the Alabama series, but it's a really important game for Florida State to really kind of get their legs up under them and get in sync and get ready for that massive Labor Day matchup that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But before we do that, I got to ask some questions, right, about the personal journey to where you've been. I mean, let's be honest. There, when you talk about seats at the desk, no pun intended, there's probably maybe 20, 25 of those that exist in the college football world, and you have one of them. So it is an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show as an aspiring media personality myself. So I just got to ask, like, what was your journey? Give us a brief walkthrough of what your journey was coming out of Florida State. Was it always college football media for you? Was that always the goal? And then, like, just walk us through the path to get to the ACC Network.
Well, first of all, you're not aspiring. You're doing it. But I appreciate those kind words. I try to look at it like that. You know, there's only X number of seats and you know, game day shows that, you know, happen on a Saturday, and I get to be a, you know, a part of one of them. And that's like a really, that puts your career into perspective when sometimes you just go to work every day and you think, this is just my job. Like, I have a pretty cool job, and it's been a journey to get here. So I graduated from Florida State in 2013 out of the media production program. Great year. I graduated in the spring. So I was officially working. No, it's okay.
Yeah.
I was officially working in the workforce when Florida State won a national championship. Funny enough, my first job was, I worked in local TV for 10 years before getting to ESPN and the ACC Network. So my first job was in Dothan, Alabama. So obviously a lot of Florida State people know Dothan, Alabama. It's about 2 hours, you know, west of Tallahassee. That was my first gig at the CBS there, WTVY. And we covered Auburn, Alabama, and Florida State because we had a lot of kids from that part of the, you know, our region that played at Florida State. Marquez White was one of them. Jeremy Pruitt, you know, being from Alabama, part of stuff, you know, Charles Kelly, whatever, all these names. So we would cover Florida State too. So I actually, in my first year of my career in television, got to go to Pasadena to watch Florida State win a national championship against Auburn. And funny, at the time, Rhett Lashley was the OC at Auburn, now the head coach at SMU. So I cover him in that capacity. So it's definitely like a full circle journey. Stayed in Dothan for like 3 years, went to Huntsville, Alabama after that, doing the same thing, weekend sports anchor at the CBS, WHNT there. And again, covering a lot of college football, Auburn, Alabama, you know, it's a religion in Alabama. And I'm so grateful that that's the route I had, because, you know, I went to multiple national championships and SEC championships and got to be around some of the best college football at the time, you know, and some of the best environments you'll ever see in college football really primed me for where I am now. From there, I went to Indianapolis for 4 years. So I kind of expanded to the pro football world.
Okay, cool.
And, you know, basketball, Pacers, Fever, a lot of racing, IndyCar. So I'm a big racing fan, too. And I worked at the NBC WTHR there. And after, you know, 4 years, I was like, man, let me just send a cold email, try my hand at getting to the ACC Network. I'm a Florida State grad. I'd love to be back in the college world. And bada bing, bada boom, it worked out. And that summer there was an opening, and I hopped in the chair with Mark Packer on ACCPM in his basement in Charlotte in August of 22. And it's been up from there. So I've gotten to do a bunch of things. You know, I host, I've sidelined our ACC Prime football package. That was in 23. And I've hosted now the Huddle. This will be my third season hosting. So I do a little bit of everything, whatever they ask me to do here at ESPN, I do. And it's been a wonderful journey, but it's great to be back in the college ranks and covering, you know, the passion that is college athletics.
Yeah. And it's a great time for it. I mean, you know, there's all the talk about the game and everything that's going on with it, but it really, I mean, the numbers say that it's more popular than it's ever been. And so it's a great time. And that's such a cool story. I mean, to see the full circle moment, I mean, not to mention EJ was your quarterback during your time when you're in college. Jimbo was your coach. And now you get to work with both of them. Like, you couldn't have painted a cooler picture than that. And speaking of, like, you know, when you talk about how cool the job is and what you get to do, I got to ask, like, do you ever have to just stop and kind of pinch yourself and say, like, I made it. This is the coolest job for a football fan that, like, you could ever ask. Is that just something you ever have to stop and just be like, man, this is pretty freaking cool that I get to do this?
You have those moments. Like I said, sometimes, you know, I pull up to the building every day and that's just where I work. But, you know, people come visit and want a tour and they think it's so cool. And you're reminded, like, this is if you were to ask me graduating from Florida State in 2013, what I wanted 10 years from now, I would say, I hope I'm working or sidelining or hosting at ESPN. And I am. Like, you have to put it into perspective sometimes, because it can just, you get caught in the rat race of life. And you have those pinch me moments where, you know, when I first got to host the Huddle, when I first sidelined, my first ever sideline experience truly was at Lane Stadium, a night game for Virginia Tech. And, you know, it almost brings you to tears because you look around and you're like, man, this is all that I've ever worked for. This summer, I finally got to host SportsCenter. And that's one of those things that, you know, you're like, this is the show at ESPN. This is the flagship show. Yeah. And, you know, you get to stand there and do it. And those are the times where you're like, man, all the work I've put in has been worth it. And, you know, you have to remind yourself sometimes, like, you earned this, you know?
Yeah.
You've worked really hard to get there. So it's a pretty special job. I'm lucky.
I mean, well, all the congratulations in the world, because that has got to be so awesome. I couldn't imagine. I would probably pass out from nerves on ESPN.
I almost did. Trust me. Don't worry.
But I mean, like, I remember the first time I got to go to ACC Media Days and, like, people are texting me like, I just saw you on ACC Network. And I'm like, get out of here. And then I got my first credentialed experience at the Florida State Virginia game last year. You know, it didn't end very well, but it was fun. It was a fun game to be at. And, like, walking around on the sideline before the game, it was just like, it was a dream come true. Oh, so. Yeah. The last one on that topic before we get into some football here is, now I got to ask, because I don't know, I don't think I would handle this well, but you're a pro. And so you probably handle it a lot better than me. Are you ever on the air and you're like, say, you know, Miami had their epic run last year and everything they do. Are you ever like, you know, congrats Miami and cut. Oh, I hate those suckers so bad. Like, it's gotta be tough to watch. Like, you know, if Miami beats Florida State, that's gotta be hard to handle and do it professionally on the air, but you're a pro. So you handle probably better than I would.
You know, it's funny. You kind of lose your fandom when you're in this job in a weird way, because you start rooting for people and players. Like, you develop these relationships with the coaches and players. So you're like, you find yourself like rooting for both teams during a game. And you're like, wait, who do I actually want to win this game? And at the end of it, you're like, I actually don't care. Now, there are times where you're like, you're like, this would be better for the league if this team wins, and this would be better for the situation if this team does good. As you get deeper into the season, you're kind of like, all right, if we want two teams in the playoff, what's the best scenario here? And you're not necessarily rooting. You're just kind of figuring those things out. It's funny, you know, I actually grew up a Gator fan. I was a very big Florida fan.
Oh, tough.
Yes, it's true. I had like Tim Tebow posters on my wall. My dad's a Gator. I ended up going to Florida State, became a Florida State fan. My brother was a Miami fan growing up. Now he's a full blown Florida State fan, 'cause he came to Florida State too. My family's very house divided, like all my cousins, massive Miami fans. So it's really fun to like go back and forth with them. 'Cause when Miami and Florida State play, like, you know, the group chat with your family goes crazy. But like last year, when you're watching the game in Tallahassee, we were sidelined for that. And towards the end, you know, Miami, inevitably, the score was probably closer than the game actually was. Miami sort of kicked Florida State's tail in that sense. It's disappointing because you look around and you're like, it's not supposed to be like this. It's supposed to be an exciting ending, but you're happy for Miami because, man, what an incredible run they had. So, no, I really genuinely, and I'm saying this, like, I don't hate anybody that I used to dislike. Like, I actually, you just, like, really root for the players and coaches. It's so weird. It's the weirdest feeling.
Yeah, no, that's going to make a question I have later a little interesting, knowing the background history. No, I get it. Like, I have a dirty secret admission that, like, when I've been at ACC kickoff, Mario Cristobal is one of the best interviews.
He's
a great interview. I might have to edit that out after this because we get to wear our emotions.
And look, here's the truth of the matter is college football is better when Florida State's good, Miami's good, and Florida's good. Like, I actually hate seeing Florida not good. Like, I think the Swamp is one of the best environments that I've ever watched a football game in. So for me, it's like, yes, I'm absolutely a Florida State fan, and I want this program to be what it's supposed to be, and I want to be at the top of college football. But you need the others, too. Like, it's so much better. It sucks when it's one-sided. It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, and I hate to in recent years when the game, I mean, it means something emotionally and to the fan bases, but sure. That game's supposed to mean something nationally. Yeah. That's supposed to be, you know, I think the last one that I remember being at other than 23 was like 13 when both teams, I think it was the last time they were top 10 or top 5. And I mean, it was the best atmosphere I've ever been to at a college football game. It was amazing. And I you know, of course, I always pray for Miami's downfall. But I understand what you're saying when you want both teams to be at the highest level. So like when you're bragging, it's not like, you know, well, we beat you, but you went 5-7. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I fired off a spicy tweet during that game last year because I was a little mad about that. But
yeah, for a diehard fan, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. But for me, man, I just hope both teams have fun and we make it to a national championship with whoever it is.
Right, right. It's funny. I tweet out a thing, you know, in Florida, Miami, who should play more often, by the way? I tweeted out a thing when they had their series, and I'm like, I just hope both teams lose. That's all. So that's like,
I know, so, I wish they were still playing. It is great.
I mean, I think that it should be mandatory to crown a true state champion. I think they should play. And UCF's still a little brother, so we'll just leave them off to the side. So now let's talk about actual Florida State. We've kind of hinted at it. Let's go ahead and talk about it because you actually had the privilege of being at Florida State's fall camp this year. And as most of the people watching this know, it's been a closed door. So you found a way in and everybody else has been locked out. So you have a good feel for where this team is at. And I really want to ask about, you know, when you're talking with them, I mean, we talked with a couple of guys at ACC football kickoff. We talked with Mike and Deuce and Ashton and Jabril. And, you know, you get an inside look into kind of how they think. And we've heard a lot of this stuff at the podium throughout the offseason about, it's a different mentality. This team has more leadership. There's no egos. There's more accountability. They hold each other to it. And I love that. And I'm wanting to believe it. But we've heard these things before. And one of the biggest problems with Florida State over the last 2 years is the way they handled adversity. And it's been not well, right? They let one loss snowball into 2 and 3 and 4. And then the thing is off the rails and they end up quitting versus Florida and all that stuff. So, like, to me, the biggest question for me this season is, like, can this team stay in the fight for 12 games? Because I think a lot of their wins, when we talk about the schedule later, are on the back half of that schedule, the most winnable games. And so can they get there still invested to win those games? So I guess my question to you is, being around the camp, being around the team, like, what is the vibe coming out of Tallahassee? And, like, are you buying into what they're actually saying?
Yeah. Well, first of all, the only reason I get in the door is because I showed up with Coach Mark Richt and EJ Manuel. So then they're like, they can come, you can come too. No, it was great to be there for our ACC road trip fall camp tour. I would say yes. Like, you can definitely feel and see a difference. Like, this team definitely looks the part. And I think they are taking it very seriously. Like, when we were watching practice, it was move, 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 move. People bought in, people playing, going toe to toe. Like, it really was what you would expect it to look like.
Right.
Now, again, they're at practice. This is what it's supposed to look like. And when I say they look the part, like, you know, we saw Jabril Rawls in the hallway. We had Ashlyn Barker on set. Even I would say Ashton Daniels is bigger than you actually think he is. Deuce Robinson, just the way he presents himself, we already know what he brings to the table. Like, this team does look the part. They have pieces. The D-line looks like it has parts. And, you know, Tony White's walking around with a swagger and a confidence that I'm not so sure, you know, was there last year. Like, I think he thought he knew what he had, but he needed a year to really get the dudes in the system and implement it. It feels different. Offensively, you can tell Mike Norvell has, like, this renewed sense of excitement because he is calling the plays again and he likes the pieces he has. Like, I think they did an incredible job securing some of the talent they needed to keep, while also supplementing in the portal. Like, they have the 22nd ranked newcomer class, right, per ESPN, which incorporates transfers and freshmen, who I've heard a lot about. Some of these freshmen really stepping up and pushing some of the older guys too, which I think is necessary. But I felt only positive vibes in the building. The new facility is incredible. So they have nothing to complain about in that department. When you look good, you feel good, you play good. And it sort of does feel like it's a trickle down effect. When we got to talk to some of these guys like Ashton and Deuce and Ashland, the leadership is different. Like, it just feels to me that this leadership is better equipped to withstand some storm. Guys who have been on this roster, Ashlyn Barker's a dude who's been here 4 years, same with Rawls. The Desir twins decided to stay. You have an Ashton Daniels who's been through the fire and chose to step into the fire coming to Florida State, knowing it was a competition and knowing the pressure that is on this program. You have Deuce Robinson, who I'm sure this phone was ringing off the hook this offseason, chose to stay and be part of a solution. I just think it's a different feeling. And does that translate to wins? I don't know. But at least I think they're better equipped to withstand some of the blows that they could potentially take early and blow back.
Yeah, I love that answer because, you know, Deuce talked a lot about that in the breakout room at ACC Football Cookout. Like, you know, not, he said there's a lot of things where we just made little mental errors. Like, that team should have been an 8 or 9 win team last year when you think back to the way the season shook out, and they ended up with 5 wins, and he knows that. And, you know, he was also asked, like, is it fair to say that you guys understand the pressure that you could theoretically control Mike Norvell's job this year? And he understood. He's like, look, man, that is, we understand that. We know the pressure that's on us this year. And he asked, like, would that be fair? And Deuce said, look, life's not fair. And so I think they know that they have to perform well this year. And, you know, again, like, when you look at the schedule, let's be realistic, they're probably not going undefeated. So there's going to be a loss or two in there somewhere. And so that's when that leadership has to show up, because that's to me, that's the difference between 22 and 23 and 24 and 25 is the leadership that, you know, when you lost Jordan Travis and you were still able to go to the Swamp and beat the Gators, when you lost your backup quarterback and you were able to go to Charlotte and win an ACC championship, that was the difference that's in
leadership.
That team.
That's leadership.
Right.
I talked to Jeff Colhane on ACC PM this week, voice of the Seminoles. And, you know, he said, I'm not going to say Ashton Daniels plays like Jordan Travis. We're not going to comp them as the same person, but he sees a lot of Jordan in Ashton, which I think is a good sign. And, you know, Jeff's at practice all the time and he's inside and he knows these guys really, really well. And one thing I'll also note on the leadership front, I asked Ashlyn Barker about what he's learned about leadership throughout the course of his 4 years. Cause you know, there was a chance that he maybe wasn't coming back to Florida State this year, and he decided to come back. And when I asked him, like, what did you learn about leadership? He said something along the lines of, essentially, you can't always be the good guy. Like, you know, you can't always be the nice guy. You can't always be passive. Like, sometimes you're going to have to hold people accountable. And that was very telling to me. The way he answered it was just, it's time to step up to the plate and lead by example, but also show it. And sometimes you got to hold people accountable in that sense. So I really appreciated that answer. So I just, it feels a little bit different now. To your note, the schedule is the toughest schedule in the ACC, 22nd in the country per ESPN metrics. That is obviously a moving target. But with that being said, like, you know, it's probably a better team. I don't know what it ends up looking like record wise. They could surprise some people, and I'm hopeful for Florida State that's the case.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And my favorite thing about Jeff Colhane is he showed up like right after we started and coined the phrase, like, fire up the war chant and plant the spear. I was like, well, that's great press for me every time he says it. But no, I think you're right. Like, I swear you might be reading my notes through the screen somehow telepathically, because I do have literally like to talk about that. There has been a lot of comparison by us as well of that 2022 team, you know, a team that 21 was coming off of a 5-win season. Again, 5-win season for Florida State last year. You got Jordan Travis, a guy who was, you know, more known as a runner of the football. Not a lot of people really wanted him to come back for 22. And he took that massive step and a heavy running team. That's what their identity was. And I think that's a lot of what we're going to see this year. So with Florida State. So before we get into that schedule, because I actually had upgraded team versus tougher schedule to talk about on here. Just, I know you hinted at it a little bit. I know you're high on Ashton Daniels. I've heard you talk about him before. I am too. I think people are sleeping on him a little bit, especially when you look back to what he did at Auburn, those last couple of games when they were able to kind of call a game that works for his skill set. I think he can surprise people this year if the offensive line can give him time. That's obviously the biggest question. So give me your read on the offense this year. Obviously, you know, Ashton Daniels steps in at quarterback. Mike Norvell's back calling plays. There's a ton of talent at the skill positions. A little bit of question on the offensive line and the tight end room, but give me a read on this offense. Do you think they can get the job done with that Mike Norvell, Ashton Daniels, Deuce Robinson, Chroma combination?
Yeah, well, the question is the offensive line, right? Which is the core of any offense. There's a lot of new pieces there. And you have some guys who have been there, like Andre Otto, who need to come into form and be what they expect him to be. But I think they have pieces. They bring in Xavier Chaplin, who has a ton of talent, who has played in the league, has played at some big time programs, to come in and be a force on that left side. I think that's good. I think just finding the right mixture might take a second, the right combination might take a second, but I think they have the dudes more than five deep to be able to make something happen. Yeah. What I do love though is the pieces that it's not just on Ashton Daniels, and we know Mike Norvell can call plays with the best of them. That is how he's made his career. That is his bread and butter. They have the weapons to have success. So as long as the offensive line can do its job to the best of its ability, this is not all on Ashton Daniels. And that's kind of why I like it, is because he doesn't have to be this perfect passer, this perfect quarterback. He has dudes he can get the ball to. Deuce Robinson, you have Mekhi Danzy, Javon Boggs. I've heard a lot about Jason Lopez. I'm excited to see him, the freshman. I know Devin Carter is going to be out for some time, it sounds like, with an injury.
Yeah.
Another really good freshman, but they have pieces. And that backfield, you can wear some teams down if you can figure out a way to run the football. And I think that can be Florida State's strength, not just Ashton Daniels with his legs, because he can do it. He's a dual threat guy. But I've heard Ouse Chroma, Barker said that's the toughest person he's ever had to tackle. Yeah. And we've been waiting. We've seen him as a freshman. I remember watching him at practice and he was just a baby. And we're like, this dude is large. And this might be his time to really step up to the plate. Then you bring in Trey Wisner from Texas, who knows what big time football is supposed to look like. And now in this league, I think he can do some big things. Sam Singleton, that is someone Jeff Colhane mentioned yesterday, who's poised for an even bigger role in this offense. This doesn't only have to be on Ashton Daniels. So if they can find the right combination of offensive linemen to sustain and be healthy, then they have the pieces to plug and play and go do some big things offensively. Not worried about this offense. I think that wasn't the question last year, truthfully. I think defensively is where most of your questions lied.
Yeah, I agree. If they can figure out the offensive line, I think this could be a top 25, top 30 type of offense for sure. I think you bring up a good point. Like Ashton Daniels, to me, you have to divide his time between Stanford and Auburn, because he was doing basically everything. He had like one good receiver at Stanford. I think it was like 24. Their running backs didn't score a single touchdown all season, which is insane.
It was him and Elikai Omanor.
It's insane to think your running backs didn't even score a touchdown all season. So he was doing everything. You could see the difference when he had pieces like Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton at Auburn that could create separation. That's when you saw him kind of flourish. And to your point, I love the skill positions really across the board. I'm on the Jason Lopez hype train. I'm looking forward to that as well.
I'm excited to see it.
And I think Sam Singleton, when you watch him in the drills, he's the most fluid back that they have. Like, he's got electric speed. But let's flip over to the defense, because you talked about that's where your questions are. And I agree. I am still a fan of listening to Tony White talk. The jury's out on his defenses, but I think last year we saw the highs of highs. Like, they shut down Alabama. They shut down a solid Wake Forest offense. Then you saw the lows against Pitt and against Virginia. And I just think you made a good point where you're like, year two in this system should make a big difference. And the one thing that has stood out to me more than anything during camp is that the renewed sense of, like, we have to be a physical defense. We have to put the fear back in the spear and make guys, you know, fear this defense. And Chris Jones is a big part of that. Obviously, coming in linebacker, he's got a little bit of that kind of craziness, headhunter mentality to him. You mentioned already the Desir twins and Ashlyn Barker, Jabril Rawls. There's still some questions, right? The interior of that defensive line, the depth of that defensive line. Who are your other linebackers outside of maybe two or three guys? Those are the questions that I have. But give me your read, your maybe confidence and concern on this defensive side of the ball.
My confidence is higher, certainly, because I do think in his system, Tony White's, you need the right pieces if you were going to run that scheme. I think they've went out and got some of those pieces, and the guys who are back are better positioned to play their part. And you have some of them playing even bigger roles, like Barker moves over into a different role that Earl Little played before. So it's more natural to him, and he feels like he's better equipped for that kind of role. You bring in like a Rylan Kennedy, and you mentioned Chris Jones and Bear as well. He's coming from what, Carolina, I believe. Yeah. You have dudes who have played some ball. And I think that want to be part of this defense. And I think you had to weed out some of the bad blood that was over there. There were just some guys who were in it for themselves, and it went the wrong way really fast. And I think, I mean, look, Ashland talked about that. He did, right or wrong. He talked about that. And I think you weeded some of that out, and you brought in guys who really want to buy in to what they're doing, not just for them, but for the better part of this defense. I think they have to obviously apply more pressure. Like, I just think that's natural. It starts up front on the defensive line. 6.5 sacks for Desir last year, it has to be double that. Like, you have to be the leader in the clubhouse in that department. And when I talked to Tony White, I said, give me a name on that D line. Give me some name. And he said, I think Dan Lyons is going to have a great year. So that's someone who's been around, who's played his part. He's a redshirt senior. It's go time. So you have pieces. Now it's putting it together. I just think in his scheme and in his system, it takes a year or two to get it right. And I think they have the talent to be able to do it this year, long, lengthy, and physical. And that's what they've been working on throughout spring and fall camp.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, they didn't have a Jack that they liked last year. I think Barker, I know Earl Little's a talented guy. He's probably going to go off at Ohio State. I think Barker can be better at that rover safety position, just being basically like an extra linebacker. He's a big, physical, long guy like you talked about. And I think just a give a crap factor that we've heard this team talk about, it just makes a big difference, right? I think it's going to make a huge difference of being invested. But like you said, I mean, the pressure is where it's got to start, because they just struggled with that last year. Yeah. And you just need more consistent guys. It can't just be, you know, when you have a true freshman as your best pass rusher, like, that's kind of a problem.
I mean, was the difference in 23. That was the difference.
Yeah, like you didn't have a Jared Verse. You didn't have, I hate to use it as an example, but like, you didn't have a Bane Amezidor last year. No. You didn't have that game wrecker off the edge. And so if you can get somebody to step into that, I think it's going to change this defense. Now, let's talk about the schedule, because you hinted at it earlier, like seven of the top eight teams in the ACC by win odds. Then you get the luxury of playing Bama and Florida out of conference. Of course, you get New Mexico State and Central Arkansas, which, look, I was at Jacksonville State, so we ain't penciling nothing in. You would hope two wins there. So I guess my question is, obviously, the hottest topic around Tallahassee is, like, where is the line in the sand this year for Florida State? Like, where do you – for me, I think you have to have something like an 8-4 season, and not just an 8-4 season. I think it has to look good as an 8-4 season. You cannot go up and lose to Boston College. You cannot have – another winless year on the road. You cannot get embarrassed and lose by like 30 points to Miami and Alabama or Florida like you did last year. Like, I don't know that you're going to beat a rival this year with as good as Miami is. But, you know, when you look at that schedule, like, I think Florida State, the thing is, this is a schedule to me that's either going to prove what it needs to, or it's going to prove what it needs to, right? It's either going to prove that it's time for a change, or it's going to prove that, look, you know, I know there's a lot of talk around, like, how wins versus strength of schedule versus strength of resume and all that stuff. If you win 8 or 9 games against this schedule, you've done something. But at the same time, for me, if you go 6-6 or 7-5, that's not enough at Florida State 7 years into a tenure. That's not enough to really bring belief back to this program and get the donors back out in this area where it's so important. I think anything below 6-6, obviously we're talking about probably a coaching change, but For me, I just want to know, like, where would you – because you're an FSU alum. Like, you obviously care about this university. Yeah. You care about seeing it back to where it was. When you were in school, you know, an 8-win season was a disappointment by all means. So, to me, where would be your line in the sand that you looked at this year and you said, okay, all right, Mike, I'm back on board. I'm believing. I think we need another year of this. We can get this back rolling again. Or where is it kind of like, you know what, it's been cool, it's been fun, but I just don't know if this is working.
If you can find 8 wins on this schedule, I mean, in Florida State history, that's, you know, okay. But right now, based on, if you're looking at it today, everything is subject to change. We think we know about Louisville. We think we know about Miami. We think we know about Clemson. We think we know about Bama, who's ranked 13th. We think we know SMU. Like, we don't actually know. Like, we think we know. Things can change. Like, I'm not sure everyone was talking about Virginia preseason last year,
right,
and they end up where they are, right? So if you can find 8 wins on the schedule today, which I could see, if Florida State takes another step, there are some games here that they can win and make it 8. If you can even best that, that's obviously an ideal season for Florida State. You know, what is the win total right now? 6.6. I think that's what they have it at. I think they do better than that. I genuinely do. I think Florida State has a better season than people anticipate. Do I think it's a double-digit win season? I don't see it on the schedule today. Yeah. I don't. But as the season goes, and if they show me something in this first month of the season, then why not? But if you're going to ask me today, I can see a max 8 wins until I see the product on the field.
Yeah, I think we're in lockstep on that, because we just did our win-loss prediction for the season. And I looked at the S&P data, and it is 6.6 wins. I think when I did my win percentages, I came out with like 6.56 or something like that. And the crazy thing is, like, there's so many – when you break down the S&P data, like, there are 7 games that are within a touchdown spread. And
that's,
so it's like,
right,
you get
that's
5 of
point.
Them at home.
That's my point. If one happens to go your way, because that is football.
Right.
Like, the ball bounces your way, and right, sometimes – when you least expect it, and even in the winning seasons, the margin of victory is a lot of the times just like this. They just happen to go the right way for you. If they can get a few of those and get to 8, 9, then you're in business. And yeah, that is what you're looking for from Florida State, to push in the right direction. You just want to see motion. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, motion. I agree. I mean, you were 0-4 in 1-score games last year. If you can figure out a way to go
change
3-1, something like that, you're basically at 8 wins, which is why I think the first, to your point and mine as well, that the first month of the season is so crucial, mm-hmm, for this team. And that's why I want to transition to talking about that Florida State SMU game. Again, we are not overlooking New Mexico State by any means. You still have to go out and win that game, but you were also on campus for SMU's fall camp. And so who better to ask about this matchup than someone who has seen both teams in fall camp? And really, you know, when I look at the schedules for both teams, like, both teams really need this game in the worst kind of way. And SMU is currently a 2.5-point favorite inside Doak Campbell Stadium, basically a coin flip if you want to look at it that way. But, like, SMU goes to Louisville in Week 3, which is their pretty much biggest conference game, because I think a lot of people from the conference perspective think they'll get the win in Tallahassee. I'm picking Florida State in that one. I'm going to go ahead and give the sauce away. I do think Florida State gets the upset there, but – you know, they go to Louisville in Week 3. Florida State goes to Bama in Week 3. So both teams, whoever loses this game, could likely start 1-2, which would be a massive disappointment for both teams. So,
yeah,
you know, when I asked you about the vibe coming out of Tallahassee in fall camp, before we get into the actual game itself, how is SMU's vibe in fall camp?
They feel confident. SMU's confident, and that starts from the top down with their head coach and Rhett Lashley. He knows what he has, and that man can call plays too.
Yes.
That offense is explosive. And when you have a healthy Kevin Jennings, and he's heading into Year 3, he's experienced, he knows this system like the back of his hand. And he does have some new playmakers at his disposal. But when you plug and play in Rhett Lashley's offense, they're bound to score points. Defensively, they lost their defensive coordinator, Scott Simons, who's now with the Dallas Cowboys. And that's definitely a big loss, but they've elevated 2 guys to be co-defensive coordinators who, again, know the system, know their personnel. The secondary has to be better for SMU, and they know that, so they've made that a concerted effort. But, man, they have some dudes. They have some dudes, and they've recruited well. They have transfers that have come in that have fit the spots that they needed help at. And I don't think the hype is too high on this SMU team. I think they're legit. And if they can come out of the gates hot, whether it be a win at Florida State or a win at Louisville, this team does not face Miami. They missed some of the other big ones in this league. You could see them in Charlotte again.
Yeah, I think that's why people say, like, if they start 2-3-0, because they got like a easy game in the middle, it's smooth sailing from there.
Yeah,
and I think you're right. I mean, 14-2 in the ACC since you've joined is no joke.
But they
right?
were a win away at Cal last year from the ACC championship game and potentially a college football playoff again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a very big fan of Rhett Lashley as a coach. Like he is one of the best coaches in the conference to me. Now, talking about that game, just a couple quick more things here on that is, to me, I think this should actually be a pretty good quarterback battle, right?
Yeah.
And mostly because we are handicapping a little bit towards Florida State, right? Because you already brought it up. Kevin Jennings is one of the most polished passers in the ACC, top four in yards and yards per attempt the last 2 years. Did have a little bit of an interception problem last year as well with 13 picks, but he's one of the better quarterbacks you're going to see from an ACC perspective. But SMU had the 135th ranked pass defense last year. So that should, depending on how much they improved it, should open the door for some opportunities for Ashton Daniels and this receiver room. So to me, that is like, I know this game to me is going to be won and lost in the trenches. Can you pressure Kevin Jennings? Because if you let him sit back there and pick you apart, mm-hmm. you're in trouble. It's a long night.
And he can use his legs too.
Right. Now that he's not injured, now that he's back healthy. So I'm watching kind of that quarterback battle, but there's a specific matchup that you're watching in that game that you think if team A wins that battle or team B wins that battle, they're probably going to win the game.
I'm a possession. I think it's going to matter in this game because both, I feel like offensively can score at a high clip and quickly. So I think whoever can run the football better and maintain possession is genuinely going to have a better shot at the end of the game, because like that spread shows you, I think it's going to be close at the end. So I think running the football more than anything, you can focus on the quarterbacks. If one can establish the run better than the other and maintain possession, like I know both of these coordinators can find the end zone real quick. Being patient, I think, is going to be key in a football game like this.
Yeah. And it may come down to which quarterback runs the ball better in that game. Like, who knows?
Yes.
But I see, to me, I look at it like Florida State gets a tune-up, SMU does not, and they're breaking in a ton of new pieces. So I think Mike Norvell's waiting in the bushes to jump out and surprise him like he does with the early season. And a nugget, when you're on air, if you'd like to use it, feel free. They were 3-3 in true road games last year, but SMU has not won their opening game versus a Power 4 opponent since 2021. Now, granted, they were a G5 for three of those years, but they have struggled to get out of the gate a little bit early against Power 4 teams. So they've lost the last couple in a row.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have an early lean on that game, but right now I'm kind of leaning.
It's so hard. I need another week.
Yeah,
I need to see some things.
I need that week zero game, right? Because I think for Florida State in that week zero game, like I don't think you're going to prove anything by winning by 50. But if you come out like Clemson versus Troy last year and you win by like 20, I think that's what you're watching in that game. But let's talk about the ACC picture while I got you here, because obviously you cover the entire conference. And that is, I have a hard enough time covering one team, let alone 17 plus Notre Dame. Now, to me, this is a really crowded conference picture this year. I mean, on paper, you have Miami. Then it feels like you have SMU, Louisville, and kind of battling for second. But to me, there are really about 10 teams after that could sneak up and make a run at Charlotte. I mean, you have a couple in the bottom two or three that maybe you don't feel that way about. But overall, I think there are legitimately like 10 teams in the conference this year, maybe 13 teams that could make an appearance in Charlotte. So just give me your overall thoughts on the depth of the conference and just kind of what an exciting year it could be with this many teams that could play for a conference championship.
Yeah, I think – you know, it's really anybody's game outside of Miami. And Miami can't misstep either. How do they handle their success? Is this finally the time that they go and win an ACC championship? Because they do have the best roster. They do have the best quarterback in the conference, if you look at it on paper. And they have a schedule that is manageable enough for them to win the big ones and get to the championship game and hoist a trophy. Behind it, it's so hard to say, but I think that is what's exciting. And I think this league does have some great quarterback play. Some of them transfers in, but you have like at Virginia Tech, just in the Commonwealth alone, you have Ethan Grunkemeyer coming from Penn State. And then you have Bo Prabula at UVA, who's coming from Missouri, previously Penn State. So guys who have played some big time football. Even if you look out west at Cal, you have JKS, Jaren Kiave, Sanga Politele, and Tosh.
I'm glad you said it because I can't.
It takes practice getting launched out there. And, you know, I talked to Max Olson, writer for ESPN yesterday, and he has a great pulse on college football. He's like, man, Cal did some big things in the portal. So when you have a quarterback like you do in JKS, who Jimbo Fisher will be the first one to tell you might be, like, if he's drafting right now, he's taking JKS.
Really?
Pure talent. If they can do some big things, like don't overlook Cal out there out west. I just think there are so many options that you're going to have really competitive football. Don't sleep on NC State. They have CJ Bailey. If I'm sticking to the quarterback thing, like it is really wide open, and it's going to be really fun to see who really takes the bull by the horns. And it's anybody's game. Schedule is a big part of this too. You know, we're transitioning in this league from 8 to 9 conference games, and some teams play 9, some play 8. So with it being, you know, as big as it is, you know, 17 teams, you miss some. So whose schedule bodes the best? You have NC State and Virginia have the two easiest schedules in the ACC. Can they take advantage of that? Right. And they both have quarterbacks. And one team just made it to a championship game last year. So it's going to be such a race to the finish that I think in November we're having some real conversations.
Yeah, and it's funny because I actually just published an article on our website about schedule, what I called schedule swapped wins.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Like when you get to a big enough point in the conference where conferences get so big that you can have two teams competing for the same conference championship that are really having two different paths. And like what I did was I took the S&P numbers and I just basically swapped the schedules, right? And NC State, like NC State's schedule, or they're projected to win 7.1 games this year per S&P. Florida State's at 6.6. When you swap that, NC State, if they played Florida State's schedule, they dropped to 5.7 wins.
They have them at 7.1.
7.1, which is, I don't know. I mean, but the NC State is the craziest program in the ACC. Like they are always an 8 or 9 win team, and yet 1-10 win season in program history. It's
I know, I put it on record yesterday. I'm going 10 wins for State.
That would be historic, literally.
But that's interesting. It is all about half of the battle now because we have such bloated conferences as scheduled.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Florida State would jump from 6.6 to 8, and NC State would drop from 7.1 to 5.7. on their win total. So you make a good point. It's just where you get, you're almost getting what's called now schedule teams, right? Where they just kind of miss it. And so when you look at the ACC, a couple quick questions on some of the teams here. Do you have a dark horse team in the ACC that maybe people aren't talking about that they should be watching? Like I have a couple surprise teams. Like I think Syracuse is a team with Steve Angeli back that people should not sleep on. Right. Yeah. I mean, look at what Fran Brown has done there before they lost their quarterback. I think he was like 14-3 or something like that. But from a dark horse perspective, maybe not that's going to sneak up and win the conference, but a team that like you better watch out for.
That would be a Cal for me. Is one of those teams that you can't sleep on because when you have a quarterback like they do in JKS, and I know that defense is going to play its tail off with Lupoi running the show. That's a team that they did it last year. They did it the year before. They will get a win or two that's going to ruin everybody else's chances. The other team would definitely be Virginia Tech. And I'll stand by that. I keep saying it. That's quote unquote one of my dark horses in this league. When you have a coach like James Franklin, you cannot just like turn a blind eye to a team because they're in year one of a new era. It doesn't work like that. He brings a quarterback that he knows who has plenty of Big Ten experience, who looked pretty good numbers wise doing it last year, despite it not resulting in necessarily wins in that column. But they can recruit the heck out of some players and they've done that. So I would say Virginia Tech is one of those teams that is, especially by midseason, I would assume teams won't want to play.
Yeah. And the next question probably fits in with that question, but you know, something that I kind of came up with that's fun to talk about this year is like, who is your chaos agent, right? Not a team that's like top five in the odds to win, but like a team that could wreck someone else's season. And really for me, like, I hate to say this because I'm also admitting that I don't think Florida State's going to win the ACC this year. I kind of think it's Florida State because you play all the top teams in the conference. So like, you know, it say you even go 7-5, but you hand SMU a loss. Does that knock them out of Charlotte? If you go up and beat Louisville on the road, or Clemson, is that the team that like could knock someone else out of the ACC picture for Charlotte? And to me, that's my chaos agent, but I don't know if you have one that's different than the two you just talked about.
Georgia Tech.
Oh, that's a good pick because I question what they're going to look like without Haynes King.
It's different, right? It's going to be different, but I still think they have arguably the best backfield in the league. One of the best, top three. And a younger, less experienced quarterback, but a guy that we know has some juice to him in Alberto Mendoza. Maybe it runs in the family. I don't know. They've had changes at coordinator. Buster Faulkner going from OC in Atlanta to now at Florida is a massive change. I don't think people realize just how important he was and what they do. But I don't know, Georgia Tech, just the way they're built foundationally under Brent Key, like they will win some big games. And I anticipate, you know, I'm excited to see them against Colorado and Tennessee early because that'll really tell us what they're all about. But there's no way that they just completely fall off a cliff. Like in some of these big games, they will play up to the big games. It's how do they play against the middle tier teams?
Yeah.
So they could be a chaos agent because they have been the last couple of years.
Yeah. I love Brent Key as a coach, by the way. Yeah. Like I would run through 10 brick walls for that guy.
Yeah.
Just hearing him. I was actually intimidated to ask him a question at ACC football kickoff because he was coming off the top rope.
No,
he was
in mid-season form. And one thing I need people to understand about Brent Key is, he's not always the easiest interview in the sense that he'll get you. Like he's listening to everything you say and he takes things very literally. And you got to come correct when you come for Brent Key.
Yeah, I nudged my co-host. I said, there is no way I'm asking a question right now. There is no way.
Yeah.
But this last one on the ACC, before we hit some fun rapid fire questions here and get you up out of here, is this one seems obvious. But I think there are actually a few different ways you could go with this. Which ACC team, again, this is going to seem obvious, is under the most pressure to win this year? Obviously, you think Mike Norvell, but you also got Bill Belichick at UNC. Things are starting to get questioned at Clemson with Dabo. It feels like it's Florida State, but do you agree with that?
I certainly, Florida State, if you're talking about the future of people's careers, I don't think Clemson is poised to move on from Dabo regardless of what happens this season, but I just think I would say the pressure is in Clemson, South Carolina, just because this team has guys again, just like they did last year. And we know the standard that's been set. And we know that Dabo is an elite coach. There's no reason that they shouldn't be at the top of this league. So I just think because of Clemson and the brand that is, there's a lot of pressure there. And it's not because he's bound to lose his job. I would never, if you ask half this country, majority of this country, if they would take Dabo as a head coach, they would say, hell yes.
Yeah.
It's just because in a league like the ACC, there's no reason that Clemson, with the resources they have and the talent that they're able to recruit, shouldn't be in the conversation or in the ACC championship every single year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've said for the longest time, like you look at Nebraska, they fired Bo Pelini for winning 9 games too many times. I'm like, you have to be careful what you wish for.
Exactly.
And
I had Clemson
as a national title pick last year and then to go 7-6. I do think there is pressure there. Like you said, not from a firing perspective, but like, hey, man, this is getting a little bit stale, right? And so
he knows that. Look, Dabo this offseason, while he does preach a lot about, hey, look at the past and the success we've had, as he should, because he has the trophies to prove it. All right. Yeah. He has pedigree to stand on. He's been honest. The arrow is pointing in the wrong direction. He knows that. So, you know, bring back Chad Morris. You're 2 under Tom Allen as the DC, which again, we've already said, like transitioning defensive schemes is not always easy. I think, you know, the synergy's better suited for success this year.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because Florida State goes into year 2 of their defensive coordinator. Clemson goes into year 2. Even Corey Heatherman at Miami. People forget that was his first year last year. That could be scary.
Yeah, dudes.
Yeah, and then the last question I have on the ACC is the ACC championship game for the first time is moving to the noon time slot. Now, I am a, you know, Madison Social shout out in Tallahassee. The noon games suck. I hate noon games. But as a native Charlottean, that game has never had good weather in the 5 or 6 times I've been to it. It's always cold and always rainy. So what do you think about moving to the noon time slot?
I love it. And you get the eyeballs. You're alone in that time slot. You're not competing with the Big Ten. And I just think, you know, get the job done. Let's sit on the couch and watch everyone else. And hopefully it's a little warmer during that time of the day, because there's no reason that I should be wearing a coat in Charlotte. I know it is early December, but still, I think it's a great move for the league. And, you know, people are excited for that full day of football. Sit down early, watch, and stay. Like, I just genuinely think for the league to showcase exactly what it is, that noon time slot is a perfect place to be.
Yeah, I know every time I've been, it's cold and it's rainy, and I'm like, I love night games, but not this one. So I think it'll be a welcome change. You just got to wake up a little bit earlier. Might not pertain to us this year, but that's okay. We'll be back eventually. Now, let's move on to some fun rapid-fire questions before we close the show out here. I mean, there is nothing better than a game day in Tallahassee as a fan, as a Florida State fan. I love tailgating with friends. I love being at Doak. I know you probably don't get to do it as much as you wish you could now that it's a job for you. But the first one is, like, what was your ideal game day in Tallahassee as a fan when you were still there?
Okay. When I was a student, I would be at a fraternity house of some sort, pre-gaming the game. That's for sure. Maybe a trip to Pots and Painted beforehand. That was my spot. So it was probably, I don't even know if they're still on campus, Delt or Phi Sig, one of those two. Then you walk over to the stadium and you go to the game. That was my game day. And then afterwards, rain or shine, win or lose, we were going to, we were going out after.
Yeah, for sure.
Probably Coliseum or 2020, which I don't think either one exists anymore.
I know, it's changed so much. There's a lot of fun post-game nights. I don't really remember in Tallahassee that were, I'm sure it was a great time if I could.
Yeah.
And on that though, this one might be tough, but what is your favorite football memory from your time when you were at Florida State?
So it actually wasn't even a win, but it was, and I just found the ticket the other day, which I took a picture of it, 2010 ACC championship game against Virginia Tech. Went and took a bus with some of my friends from my sorority and some of the fraternity guys, and we came up to Charlotte, and it was cold and it was rainy. It was literally snowy.
Of course.
We had the best time, stayed at some crappy hotel, and it was just an awesome road trip. I know we didn't get the win. And that's one memory that will always, always, always stand out to me.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've had some fun ones.
And then being a sideline for watching the national championship.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
In Pasadena. I was there. I was literally at the goal line when he caught the touchdown.
That's amazing. I was there, not sideline, but I was at the game. And I mean, it was amazing. I remember thinking for the first half of the game, I was like, did I really spend all this money and fly all the way out here to watch us lose to friggin' Auburn? Till we figured out they were stealing signals, started using towels, and then it was, the rest is history, right?
Yeah.
Now this is the question I said that might give you some trouble, based on your earlier answer, like bigger rival as a Florida State person now, bigger rival, Florida or Miami?
I think it's Florida.
Really? I'm a Miami person.
Yeah. Actually, God, it's so hard.
Now, I know that you have the ACC ties when it comes to Miami, so there is that. And I know a lot of people do say Florida. I think it really depends on the area you grew up in.
So, okay. Yeah, it does depend on the area you grew up in. Okay, I think it's different. I think the Miami rivalry is more heated.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's more respect in, like, there's just the history of the Florida State rivalry is just different. But I think the Miami Florida State one is more heated.
Yeah.
And you had some big matchups.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, Dan. It's hard. You're a Florida State Miami.
Yeah. It's just, there's no game like the Florida State Miami game to me. And I will say, like, I go to Georgia, Florida with my wife every year. And like, I'm not a good fan. I wear Florida State stuff still. I do not wear any other colors.
I'm with you.
And like, the Florida fans give me way more crap than they give to Georgia fans. I mean, they're mostly like, why are you here? But yeah, I mean, it's a huge heated rivalry, but Miami's just something about it.
I'm with you. I'll go Miami, Florida State. Like, I just think it's more heated. There's more conversation. Yeah. There's more jarring back and forth now, but Jimbo will tell you it's a little bit more heat. Like internally, there's a little bit more of a, we don't like you when it comes to Florida because of the history that's there in terms of they didn't want to come to Tallahassee and play and all that stuff back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, so, the famous line, we just beat the damn Gators, obviously, from Jimbo. So you have that. I just think with Miami, it's like, you know, to me, from Miami's perspective, they have us.
It's the bigger rivalry, like the bigger, more known rivalry.
Florida has Tennessee. They have Georgia. They have LSU. They have us. Miami has us, right? And so I think that's what makes it so heated between the two. Now, the next one is much easier, right? What's your favorite kickoff time?
Oh,
I'm night game all the way.
I'm a night game girl too.
Yeah. It's just the energy is just different. It's just so much different.
3:30 is too dang hot.
It is. It's a value slot because you get to tailgate and still watch some nighttime football. Yeah. But
yeah, I'm a night girl.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Yeah. Two left. Bucket. Now you've been to a lot, right? You've been to a lot of games, a lot of cool places.
Yeah.
What is a bucket list stadium you've never been to?
I would love to. There are a lot of Big Ten schools I've never gone to. So I would absolutely love to see a game at Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. Those are three that I would love to go to a whiteout. I just think, you know, the fandom's insane. And I would just like to see the town. Like, I've never been to those three. So those three, I definitely say, are the ones I've never been to. I've been, and I've never been to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
So a night game, nice. Notre Dame, like that Miami Notre Dame game would be one I would love to attend. I think it'll be crazy.
Well, I hope you guys are on location for that.
I don't know.
Year.
We'll see. We'll see okay. what happens. But those are probably the ones that I've never been to. I've been to pretty much almost every SEC stadium of.
See, LSU is my, it's my unicorn. It's my bucket list for
it's,
sure.
It's as good as advertised. The only other one in the SEC I haven't been to that I would like to get to is Georgia. But
yeah. That's yeah. surprisingly. I've been there for a national championship celebration, but not a game. And the craziest thing happened. It was the year that they won, the Braves won the World Series. So like halfway through the celebration, I'm just there, you know, the only guy in garnet and gold. And the whole stadium starts doing the war chant for the Braves. And I'm just like, what? This
I
is
know.
Blowing my mind right now.
I know.
I've still How never nice been to them. Blacksburg. That's like, I got to go to Lane. But you got to
do it.
We never play Virginia Tech up there. Like, what are we doing? We got to make that happen.
It's an incredible, incredible, incredible place.
And I love the guys from the Sons of Saturday. So I've been telling them forever, like, I got to get up there. I got to get up there.
They're about to see this and be like, hey, when are you coming on, girl?
Right. I know, right? Now, the last one I got for you, in the kind of the same vein of that, you are offered a ticket to any game in the country. You got the weekend off. You are offered a ticket to any game in the country during the regular season. Where are you going?
Mm-hmm. I've been to it a bunch of times, but I'll go back every time. And I'm going to,
where this is going. I got a feeling.
I'm not going to do a Florida State tie. I'm not. Cause that's
I'm
a
thinking
given.
It's a team it's you formerly covered. Yep. Yeah.
Every year. I do not. I know this is a Florida State podcast and the rivalry with Miami and Florida is great. There is no rivalry like it. And I get hate in the ACC for saying that because you have Duke, Carolina too, and some others, but there is not, listen, it is everything and more. So yes, that's where I'd be going.
I will add that to the bucket list of games to go to someday. Like I might have to do plant the elephant or something like that and sneak in or something.
It's legit.
I bet. It would be awesome. That would probably be top three for me. That or like Michigan, Ohio State, Army, Navy, something like that. Got to be.
Well, Army, Navy is a great one too.
Yeah, got to be one of those. But that's going to do it for this episode. Taylor, I cannot thank you enough for coming on the show and being so generous with your time. It was a great conversation. I had a good time. Hopefully we can do this again sometime. Obviously, I do want to say that you guys with the ACC Network are going to be at that SMU game.
Ooh.
So I don't know if you know where you're going to be, probably the same spot where they normally are, right outside the stadium towards Langford Green or something like that. But you guys, if you're watching this and you're a Florida State fan, you're going to be there. Show up and show out for them, right? They are coming to your stadium, our stadium, and treating it just like game day would be. I've been to a few game days in Tallahassee. It's a crazy atmosphere. So I hope people show up and show out for you guys there when you're at the SMU Florida State game on Labor Day. And I'll be there as well. So I will make sure to swing by and we'll catch up and say, hey, but perfect. I really do appreciate you being on the show. So I cannot thank you enough.
Thanks, Jesse. I appreciate you too. I'm excited for the season.
Awesome. Have a good one and go Noles.
Always.